The United States has aided Ukraine with billions of dollars in aid since Russia first invaded the European country this past February. According to polls, most Americans are in favor of Ukraine winning, and majorities support U.S. aid. But that support isn't universal. And Ukrainian leaders have expressed concern that the midterm elections in the U.S. could lead to a cut in support. Some Republican candidates and leaders, including House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, have criticized the scale of aid. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the U.S. should continue aiding Ukraine? Do you think the U.S. has already given enough? Will you vote in part based on attitudes toward Ukraine? What questions do you have about the latest there and the impact of the U.S. elections? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. John Reuter is an associate professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
John, looking back, how important has U.S. aid, both military and economic, been for Ukraine and its ability to sustain its war effort to fend off this Russian invasion?
It's been crucial because the big disadvantage that the Ukrainians faced from the outset of the war was in materiel. The Russians had a lot more advanced weapons and a lot more of them. And so Western military aid was crucial for tipping that balance back in Ukraine's favor. And so, you know, in recent weeks, Ukraine has made a lot of progress on the battlefield, its first real major progress since March and April. They staged a successful counteroffensive in the Kharkiv region and retook a bunch of territory. And I think that would have been impossible without Western military aid.
What are you seeing when it comes to concerns from Ukrainian leaders and from Western European leaders when it comes to the future of U.S. aid for Ukraine?
Yeah, I think a lot of European leaders, well, and also, of course, Ukrainian leaders have been alarmed at some of the rumblings in the United States about wavering support for continued aid. And those signs have come from both ends of the political spectrum, funnily enough. So there was a letter from the Progressive Caucus or some of the Progressive Caucus House Democratic Caucus that went out a few days ago and urged the Biden administration to try to enter negotiations with Russia. Then also on the right among Republicans, there's been some statements by Kevin McCarthy that maybe if the Republicans win in the midterms, that they might not be willing to use not be willing to write a blank check for continued aid to Ukraine. And the concern, the big concern for Ukrainian leaders and European leaders is not just that the U.S. might start sending less aid, but that the U.S. is such a leader on this issue that if the U.S. starts to blink in its support for Ukraine and in sending aid to Ukraine, then that might be a signal to other European countries, and then they might follow suit, and that the coalition of support for aiding Ukraine might start to unravel.
Let's look at the Republican and Democratic statements you just mentioned in turn. Starting with Republicans, you mentioned the no blank check comment from Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. Now, we haven't had an election yet. We don't know what the outcome is going to be. One possibility is that Republicans control one or both houses of Congress, giving them the power to block funding potentially by threatening a government shutdown or by other means. But that's McCarthy. We've seen some Republican candidates criticize support from Ukraine. On the other hand, we're hearing from Senate current Minority Leader Mitch McConnell saying we're standing with Ukraine here. Former Vice President, likely presidential candidate Mike Pence saying Republicans should stick with Ukraine. What are you looking at when it comes to that debate within the Republican Party?
Yeah, that's right. And I think practically speaking, it's highly unlikely that funding levels for Ukraine are going to change, or the commitment to continuing military aid to Ukraine is going to change dramatically after the election for two main reasons. First, as you mentioned, there's still a large chunk of the Republican Party that is committed to standing up to Russia and aiding Ukraine. And second, and I think this is maybe less appreciated in the media these days, is that there's a lot of money that's already been approved that's still in the pipeline, that's still being distributed. So even in no new funds are approved in the fall or the spring, it's going to be quite a while before what's already been approved is spent down.
We're talking to John Reuter from UW-Milwaukee, looking at the Russian invasion of Ukraine and American politics and the impact that the midterm elections may or may not have on continued U.S. aid for Ukraine. You could join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. Okay, we've got that letter you mentioned. 30 House Democrats had signed on to this apparently three, four months ago. It expressed support from Ukraine and for the military support from the U.S. and then says, I'm going to quote here, "We urge you to pair the military and economic support the United States has provided to Ukraine with a proactive diplomatic push, redoubling efforts to seek a realistic framework for a ceasefire." Ending the quote there. It's a lot longer than that. And that seems to be the tricky bit. How much can the U.S. step in and enter direct negotiations without Ukraine taking the lead?
Yeah, I mean, the White House, their official position all along has been that it's not for the U.S. or any other European power to decide when to start negotiation, that's Ukraine's decision. But at the same time, I think it would be naive to think that the U.S., that their opinion on whether negotiations should start doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They hold a lot of cards here. Right now, I think it's the opinion of the Biden administration that the most prudent thing to do is to try to give maximal support to Ukraine so that they can keep up this success on the battlefield. They've been relatively successful in the past few months, and so it doesn't make sense to start negotiations right now. And so, I'm not privy to the internal details, but I think there was a lot of people who were angry in the Biden administration and also among other congressional Democrats about this letter, because it seemed to come at an inopportune time. And there was also concern that, the Russians would be heartened by this, that they would be emboldened by this, that they would feel like their strategy of dragging the war out until the Western coalition in support of Ukraine started to crumble was vindicated.
And I should mention those members of Congress unsent that letter, I guess, or withdrew their support from the letter soon afterward. Now, I wanted to talk about that, what may be a strategy from Putin and the Russian leaders, that if they can hold on and wait things out, Western support will crumble. And we've seen things like we've got a new coalition government in Italy where the leader says, hey, we're still behind Ukraine, we're going to still contribute stuff. And then a Silvio Berlusconi, former leader, prime minister of Italy, privately saying he blames Ukraine for the war, bragging about the vodka he got for his birthday from Putin. Right. How do you think that this is really what Putin is hoping for, that we're going to see these elections change the level of support for Ukraine?
Well, yeah, I think it's not just these elections, but I think their general strategy is to try to hold their position on the battlefield until Western support starts to waver. So going back to your initial question, Rob, since that Western military support for Ukraine is so crucial, that's the trump card that Ukraine has right now, is continuing to get this support. And so Russia has announced what they call partial mobilization. It's the draft, and they're calling up more servicemen and women. But that takes time to train up those new soldiers and get them ready for the battlefield. And so I think Putin's longer term strategy is to call up more soldiers and in the meantime, hope that Western support starts to waver.
We're talking to John Reuter, associate professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee, about U.S. support and funding for Ukraine. What might be at stake during the midterm elections here in the U.S.? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Does foreign policy matter for you? Does support for Ukraine matter to you when deciding who to vote for? Are you supporting political candidates that do or do not want to continue funding Ukraine? What do you want to see the U.S. policy look like dealing with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with John Reuter, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee, joining us to talk about the war in Ukraine and how the midterm elections might affect how much money and military supplies the U.S. sends to Ukraine. By the way, you can learn more in the new Frontline documentary, Putin's Attack on Ukraine, documenting war crimes. The next airing is tonight at 11 p.m. There's more to come. Find more info at pbswisconsin.org. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you support the U.S. support of Ukraine? Do you want to see more of it? Do you think we've done enough? What questions do you have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. John, let's talk about the idea of negotiations. It seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, Putin is very likely to want to keep some of the parts, at least of Ukraine, that he has taken over. And that seems like it would be a non-starter for Ukraine, which understandably wouldn't want to give up their territory. It seems like hard to find a starting point.
Yeah, I think that's right. But it's especially hard to find a starting point right now when the battlefield situation is in flux. I mean, so a few months ago, Russia was on the offensive and taking more territory, so they had no incentive to engage in negotiations. And now the shoe's on the other foot and Ukraine is gaining territory, so they don't have an incentive. So we're not going to see, I don't think, negotiations here until there's a real battlefield stalemate and both sides have exhausted their possibilities for finding new ways to prosecute the war in a more escalatory fashion.
Now, among the many difficulties here is this is a war being fought completely on Ukrainian soil. Ukraine is not going to invade Russia, I think. Nobody wants them to. Invading Russia, difficult under any circumstances. It seems like that might make it possible for Russia to sustain a war effort in the event of a stalemate for potentially a really long time.
Yeah, that's a really scary and depressing aspect of this war is that... it's increasingly seems like it may be in Russia's interest to drag the war out because, as we were talking about earlier, what is really keeping Ukraine in the war is Western military support. And so if you think, you know, maybe 2 years down the road, the Russians are thinking maybe, well, maybe if Trump or a Republican wins those elections, then maybe really, you know, U.S. support for Ukraine will really decrease. And there'll be someone in the White House who is more open to the idea of dealing with Russia and entering into negotiations where Ukraine ends up, you know, making significant concessions.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Brookfield. John, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just think it's absolute foolishness not to continue to fund the Ukrainians. They're winning the war. Why would you walk away from the ability to degrade Russia's ability to bring war to the world, and especially with the horrendous way that they've conducted things? It's just ridiculous. And anybody that in Congress that votes to defund Ukraine, as far as I'm concerned, they're acting against the interests of the United States and the world peace.
John, thanks for that call. I've seen a couple things there, John Reuter, that this is in some ways an inexpensive investment from the United States to contain Russian aggression by stopping them at the Ukrainian border as much as possible. That stops whatever the next threat they might pose, say, to the Baltic states.
Yeah, I mean, that's the old, you know, strategy of containment or very similar to the old strategy of containment from the Cold War. But on the point about it being inexpensive, I mean, first I'll say I agree with the caller, but just so that we have something interesting to talk about here, on the point of it being inexpensive, The U.S. has actually contributed quite a lot to in terms of aid to Ukraine. 27 sure. billion is the latest figure. It's not insignificant. And McCarthy's comment about how they weren't going to continue writing a blank check after the election if they won, that was actually in the context of a comment about how we might be going into recession. Mm-hmm. So, his point, I think, was, well, if we're going to be drawing down spending because we're going into a recession, we're, you know, this might be one of the things that's on the chopping block.
Sure. And John, thanks for that call. And also he brought up, John, the way that Russia is conducting the war. I mentioned that Frontline documentary, a concern about war crimes, targeting of civilians. What are we seeing there?
Yeah, I mean, it's this is a very violent and bloody war, and there's going to be war crimes in any conflict like that, and this one's no exception. But I mean, I do think it's asymmetrical. I think Russia, there's ample evidence that Russia is committing a lot more war crimes in this conflict than Ukraine is. And I mean, if for no other reason than like you said, this war is being carried out on Ukrainian territory, and there are civilians living there, and civilians get caught in the crossfire. Sometimes they're intentionally targeted for a variety of reasons. And yeah, so it's a very sad outcome.
Let's go back to our callers. Glenn is with us now in Northern Illinois. Glenn, hi.
Hi.
What
is it? Just a couple of comments. We certainly definitely need to keep financially supporting Ukraine as best we can. And I think also part of Putin's strategy deploying the 300,000 new troops is to hold on to and retain land that he that.
Glenn, I think I got your point. You're breaking up a little there. I don't know if you're able to make that out over the line, but Glenn saying Putin's strategy with this big draft, this big call up of troops is to hold the territory he's got and prolong the war by throwing more of these reservists and other people he's called up over the last couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely accurate. I mean, it seems paradoxical that Russia would be the party in this conflict that's having a manpower shortage, given the fact that Russia's population is three times larger than Ukraine's. But we have to remember that early in the war, Ukraine, they implemented general mobilization. So all able-bodied men over a certain age were called up and required to enlist. And Russia, early in the conflict, was trying to insulate its population from this conflict. They didn't want Russians to view this as a war. It was called a special military operation. They didn't want the Russian population to feel the impact of this war. So they were trying everything they could to actually to keep conscripts out of the war. Russia also has military conscription. Every male has to serve, but they only serve, you know, a year or two. And Russia was trying to not have its conscripts fight. They were trying to prosecute the war only using professional soldiers and contract soldiers and private military companies. But now Russia finds itself in the unfortunate for them situation where they're outnumbered in many instances on the back battlefield. And so they have to get more soldiers onto the battlefield if they're going to hold this territory. And that's what explains this partial mobilization.
Thanks for that call, Glenn. Jeff joins us now in Dousman. Jeff, hi.
Yeah, hi. I agree with John, early caller, and I also think it's important we stand up to Russian aggression. I feel that NATO kind of dropped the ball by allowing him to attack and not stopping it at the border.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. John, the idea of a NATO direct intervention in the war has been, it seems like, a non-starter here so far.
Yeah, it has been a non-starter. And the reason for that is quite simply that Russia is the world's largest nuclear power. They have more nuclear warheads even than the United States. And so the downside risk of some type of direct military confrontation with Russia that could escalate into an accidental or an intentional nuclear exchange is so great, even if it's an insignificant chance, that that those consequences would be so grave that, you know, policymakers in Washington and Europe have been very careful to avoid any sort of direct confrontation with Russia. And I think that's the right thing to do.
Thanks for that call. On a related note, John, Russia has made claims that Ukraine would unleash not a nuclear weapon, but a dirty bomb, a conventional bomb with radioactive material attached to it. Ukraine saying this is Russian propaganda. Maybe they're setting up a false flag where they're going to do something like that. A lot of uncertainty here. How do you try to sort out these claims?
This is a very muddy situation to me as well. I can't understand fully what either the Ukrainians or the Russians would get militarily mm-hmm. out of using a dirty bomb. So these dirty bombs, they don't have much battlefield effectiveness, and they would only irradiate an area, maybe even a few hundred square meters. And so they're not particularly effective. So I think what this is, it's part of the information war going on where Russia is trying to delegitimize Ukraine and make the West. This is part of their campaign, I think, to unravel Western support, to make them realize how messy and potentially catastrophic this conflict could be. It's part of their effort to convince the West that of how messy things could get, and that it might be a good idea to wind this conflict down.
John, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
That's John Reuter, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. He joined us for a look at the midterm elections and how they might affect U.S. aid to Ukraine. Again, check out PBS Wisconsin for one current and an upcoming Frontline special on the war in Ukraine.